Yo, welcome to From the Internet, a podcast where I chat to people who I now know or have come to know of from the internet. Now, thanks to the hundreds of people that have listened to episode 1 with marriage celebrant Josh Withers and also episode 2 with Big Dog Australia's Steve McConkie. If you liked it, feel free to rate it on iTunes or share the link. That would be pretty cool. Now, episode 3 is with Brecko, James Brecko Brechny. Breckney. You know what? I've known this guy for ages. I can't even pronounce his last name. Anyway, Brecko. Now, among many, many online moments, I reckon one of the best things he's done is start DIY Rainbow, the phenomenon that now has 60,000 followers on Facebook, and it's incredible seeing all these rainbows pop up around the world. Now, I started our chat on this podcast by trying to describe what he does, but for James, he's just one of those guys where it's hard to sum up in a few words. But anyway, here's me trying to do that. Enjoy. James, usually I would write like what this person does or like describe them in a few words, and I wrote your name, and then I wrote online socialite / man about town / activist / radio host / hot mess / and I was like, you know what, stuff it, I'm just gonna ask you people say, oh, so James, what do you do for yourself? What do you do for crust?
It's so crazy. Well, it depends what they look like. Because, like, on Grindr, people always ask on Grindr, like, what do you do? And so I'm like, oh, if they're really masked, it'll be like barbecue salesman. Or, you know, if they're quite camp, it'll be Mardi Gras director. Or
yeah.
But, yeah, man, I don't know. I guess just presenter, host, MC. A whole bunch of things down here in Sydney. It's been a really crazy couple of years.
Yeah, one of the biggest things, well, actually, you tell me, but I would have thought the biggest thing that you've done is DIY Rainbow. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it changed my life for sure. So that was literally 2 years ago now, in 2013.
Yeah.
And that was a huge, huge moment for me in my life, really.
Now, is that, I'm always like, when stuff like this happens, I always wonder, is this something that you sort of went, oh, here it is, perfect opportunity. If I do this thing, it'll get this attention, it'll become this, it'll become that. Or did you simply go, oh, they've taken away this rainbow street crossing in Oxford Street and stuff it, I'm just going to draw one with chalk, and then suddenly it takes off?
I think the answer is a bit of both. I was really like 28, 29, and sort of like, oh my God, like, what's going on? I've had some fun things happen to me, but I really didn't feel any traction or anything around what I was trying to do. And so I was just a little bit, when you asked that question, I was just sort of not given up, but really relaxed about who I was as a person.
Yeah.
And just ready for anything. And really way less, it's weird. It's like I crossed this level of, you know, when you're trying to make it in radio or whatever, you got that anxiety about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that stress about it. And I really just let it all go. I was just like, I don't care anymore. And so I was doing a whole bunch of things when I got back. But that was literally like, a good example is the week before I got dressed up as a pot of gold. And I got this pot from Bunnings and I cut holes out and I stepped in it and painted my whole body in gold paint. And I sat at the end of the rainbow crossing when I thought the government was going to get rid of it. And there was really no traction around it, though, at all. And then it was the following week. It was so simple, just for Facebook as a joke.
Yeah.
I got a chalk set, a bottle of white wine. Me and my sister and our German backpacker flatmate just chalked up this makeshift rainbow crossing behind our terrace.
Yep.
And it was that photo that goes viral on the net. And then people start doing them, like, all over the world.
So yeah, it was unbelievable.
You can never pick it. Yeah.
You can never pick what it's going to be that takes off.
No, you just got to keep trying.
Yeah, and so how many things do you reckon you've tried and, like you said, just nothing came of it? And is it just like, oh, stuff it, it was a fun day anyway? Or is it just like, damn it, this was the one?
I think at the time, like, so basically for me, my background is I actually studied law, and I never finished, but I did like 5 or 7 years of it or something. And I worked in the Supreme Court for a bit, and I worked for a conveyancing firm for a couple of years. So I guess I sort of got into, I was like, F this, I know who I really am. I sort of have a vague idea of what I want to be.
Yeah.
And I got into community radio at about 25, around 25. So it's been like 5, 6 years now of just like mucking around, but I've done heaps of stuff. And sometimes you get traction and sometimes you don't. And sometimes you say, oh, well, it was just a bit of fun anyway. And sometimes you're just really pissed off.
What's one of the ones that you were pissed off at and you thought, oh, mate, this is genius, and it just wasn't? And even, like, maybe looking back now, can you see that it wasn't?
I got to work one day on a Friday, and I was like, it's Finger Friday. Everyone send me a photo of your finger. And so I took... And I
any reason or any reason or context at the time? Or just
no,
the, just alliteration? It's alliteration. No, we're on the radio. It works.
And so I think I got 30 people sent me a picture of their finger on Facebook, on my thing. And then afterwards, I really realized, like, that was a really dumb idea, and I don't really understand where I was going with that one. Also, even just the one I just mentioned, the pot of gold, like, that was a lot of work. You know, I had a mate come down with an SLR camera.
Yeah.
I'd spent, like, a day building this pot and, you know, a day painting myself in gold. And in as much as it's fun, it's also embarrassing to walk around the streets, you know, all dressed up. You got to remember, like, now people sort of know who I am a little bit in Sydney. So,
yep.
Like, it's kind of funny. But when no one knows you and you're just an absolute fruit loop, like, walking around in a pot, it's like, I was a bit pissed off at that one. I wish that had gotten a bit of traction.
Yeah, it was a great picture, and it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's actually had a bit of a comeback. Like, it's had longevity. It's a great image. But
yeah.
At the time, it was like 100 likes on my personal profile page, and I think when Same wrote an article about the crossing, they used it as a header, and that was about it.
So do you think maybe, and even though I guess that's the same issue as DIY Rainbow, maybe compared to Finger Friday, do you think the reason DIY Rainbow took off is not because of the rainbow itself, but obviously like the underlying issue underneath it, I guess?
Absolutely, mate. I think that was like, when I first started out doing stuff on my sort of weekly comedy show,
yeah.
There was no, there was never any purpose behind it other
yeah.
than a laugh. Like, I remember we launched, when I launched my show, we had a couple of people dressed up as Ghostbusters,
okay.
and a couple of people dressed up as ghosts, and we made these huge like Ghostbuster guns with pool noodles coming out, and we had them lined up on like the main highway here in Sydney, like, and people would call into the radio station if they saw the Ghostbusters. But it was a lot of effort and energy, and I don't really understand why, other than it being funny, like why I was doing that.
Yeah.
Whereas definitely for me, the other things that I've done that have probably got the most traction is like going on Q&A and pretending to be a climate skeptic, or
I forgot about that. That was
having,
I think that
like
was the first time I ever was like, "Who's Brecco? What is this?" And that was the first time I think I ever like the internet introduced you to me.
Yeah, sure. Well, that was hilarious. That was great. Because,
so who
that was actually a challenge from Dan Illick, who had written a music video for Hungry Beast that didn't get aired on the TV, but it was on YouTube, and it's still there. It's quite funny.
Yeah.
And it was a whole bunch of climate scientists singing this song, which was like, "I'm not a climate scientist," which was sort of like the chant that a lot of politicians and conservative folk who were anti-climate change were sort of saying at the time. Before, you know, as their preface, before they say something really ridiculous about climate change.
So were you approached by the producers of Q&A?
No. So Dan Illick's challenge to me was like, if you get on Q&A, like, I want you to say I'm not a climate scientist. And
yeah.
I didn't think he'd actually get on, but I submitted this really conservative question around climate change.
Yeah.
Through the web interface, and then they got it. They told me before I arrived that it was accepted. So I rocked up there with glasses and a scarf and parted hair. And again,
how can I be
a
conservative?
No,
pass me my glasses and scarf, please, sir. Now we are
exactly.
ready to go.
I could barely read the card because I was wearing like Dad's glasses and everything was so blurry.
Yeah.
And I think to meet Dan's challenge, I think I might have said it like 4 or 5 times on the broadcast when I got on.
And then,
there.
But what was the killer line? Like, gravity's yet to be proved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I was actually also quoting, I think that's actually a line from this music video from Hungry Beast. So
yeah.
I actually got a lot of traction out of his lyrics, so I feel bad about that. But it was like, you know, climate. Why are we teaching climate change in schools? It's just a theory, like gravity. And that was the sort of, and then the Twitter sphere, half the Twitter sphere sort of erupted about how dumb and awful person I was.
Yeah.
The other half that sort of knew who I was, got around pretty quickly who I was.
And is that the moment where you reckon Tony Jones and ABC went, "Oh, hang on a second, we've got ourselves a dickhead"?
They really, I think I played it too seriously, and maybe I should have cracked up towards
the end.
Or made it more crazy.
Always straight face that stuff. It makes it so much better.
Yeah,
like, you know, like at the time, you feel like you
really
want to break
know.
To. Yeah, at the time, I always think you want to be like, "Oh, guys, I'm just, don't judge me, like I'm just doing a joke." But it's like, it kills it. It's like a magician revealing his trick. Like, you got to just live it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was funny because after the broadcast, people were coming up to me in the audience and thanking me for my question, like quite conservative people. So in the actual studio, No one really knew. I think it filtered through to Tony a little bit later on in the show once Twitter sort of worked it out. But that was actually, for me, that was my first taste of, that was great because that was like, you know, it's such a big program on Twitter. When I sort of turned my phone on and we're leaving the studio, it was like, you know, hundreds of followers and hundreds of retweets. And that was super exciting for me. That was, I always had a passion for social media, but I'd never really had those big numbers before. That was awesome. Yeah,
cool. Now, this may be like a, you know, what is the meaning of life type question, but it just like, it seems like you got so many skills and so many talents and you had so many like crazy moments. Do you think there's such, like, if for you, is there such thing as like a dream job, or do you like just being free to do these moments and just keep going and doing stupid things? Or like, what's absolutely, like, if there was a perfect world, like what would you be doing in that perfect world?
I don't know. I always think of myself as a bit of a square peg, and I haven't really found the squarest hole yet, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of round holes, you know, but not a lot of square holes around. So I sort of think, I someone asked me the other day, but I think the key for me is to be free. It's really important to be able to say what you want and do what you want to an extent. I think there's a real...
is that you say that when you say free, like in terms of, say you go to your boss, like your fictional boss in a radio station, and you go, I've got this idea for a DIY rainbow, and then they go, no, that's a bit, we can't be supporting that. So talk about something, and you're just like, oh, hang on a second.
Yeah, I think so. It's a bit like that. I think in any job as well, like for me, I'm a bit of a crazy person. Yeah. I found the law and working in law offices really, really tough, I think.
It's so funny. You used to be a lawyer. I used to be an accountant.
Ah, yeah, that's right. It's funny, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, and you sort of got to work out what's right for you. For some people, it's right. But for me, I was like, oh, I remember, I think I was still at the firm I was at when I was on Australian Idol as this blue alien. And like, course, that was pushing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I don't really want to live like this. Like, I want to have fun and do crazy stuff. And so I think you sort of work out, well, what suits me? What will suit that skill set? And so I think being a presenter or a personality is probably the answer. It's actually quite funny, like, wanting to be a personality. Most people want to be an actor or something of that ilk, and then they sort of fall into presenting or being a person. But it's just easy to be yourself sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah. Did you, when you were still in the law firm, had you already started doing crazy things, i.e. dressing up like a blue alien and going on Australian Idol?
Nah, that was definitely towards the end. I think I'm gay, and I think that...
Is that right?
I wasn't really gay until... Like, I wasn't really comfortable about being gay until about 23.
Right.
And so
is that like, as you say, that's like late, or everyone's got their own story, or like...
I felt at the time that it was really, really late, but now that I'm sort of like, DIY Rainbow, it's funny, DIY Rainbow is such like a gay activism thing, but I wasn't really a gay activist before it, but I've sort of fallen into it, and I've turned out...
But that sits well with you. You said you've fallen into it, but that's a good thing, right? You're quite happy with it.
I've run with it, absolutely. I think it's fantastic. And I've learnt so much since that. Of course, I'm on the board of directors at Mardi Gras and everything, but, you know, there's so many people coming out so much later now as well. But at the time, at 23, I was in a bit of a bubble with my boyfriend and stuff who came out much earlier, and I felt that I was coming out very late, But I think a lot of my life choices leading up to that moment, unfortunately, were sort of denoted by being in the closet. So maybe choosing law and business as opposed to maybe musical theatre. I don't know.
Well, my real name, like my last name is Dunn. My name's Ryan Dunn, and John's my middle name. And why that happened is that I was working as an accountant, working on these like big, serious, you know, accounting tax matters and stuff. And then I was also working like for Nova and started to, I made a short film and stuff like that.
Mm.
And I was really nervous about, and people still do it now. Yeah, they change their name.
They're
nervous that like if a boss is going to, if they apply for a job, that they'll, you know, they'll get Googled and they'll be like, oh, this guy's a dickhead.
Yeah.
So when I was at work as an accountant, I was Ryan Dunn. And when I was being a dickhead, I was Ryan John. And now luckily I get to be a dickhead permanently. But the byproduct of that is my name's not my real name anymore.
You've got to keep your name. Yeah. That's funny. That's actually like a really smart and clever way to do it. I found, for me, leaving the job and doing like barbecue sales, where this company that I work for are really flexible and really, really great in terms of like my side career sort of takes preference.
Yeah.
You know?
So if you just go, oh, this big thing's happening and I've got to be on it, can I make it up next week? And they just go, yeah, do what you got to do.
Yeah, totally. they're really good. And I couldn't get away with a lot of the stuff that I do or have done the last couple of years without them. So it's been nice for the last couple of years to have that there. Because boys got to pay rent.
Yeah, well, that was kind of my next question. All of these things, like DIY Rainbow, incredible, and all those other things we've already mentioned are like hilarious things that, like, for me... More than this is my house and look at my flashy car and hot wife. Like for me, like yeah, at the yeah, end, I'd sure. look back and go, mate, I've done some, like you've done some so much funny things.
You guys did one. You talked to Rainbow like, in Mildura or whatever when it all went off.
We spoke
about it. You know, for me at that point in time, the crazy stuff was fun. But when, you got to understand, when it went viral here in Sydney on that Friday and the weekend, it happened in 2013, like we had hundreds of rainbows chalked all over Sydney, and it was just, the photos coming in were phenomenal. And then the next week, all over the world, you know, like literally every continent, it was just amazing, mate. And that was, I was sort of 29 going, wow, I finally think that I'm sort of finding my place in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm actually achieving something, which is good.
Yeah. Now,
so
not,
I was a bit worried there for a bit.
Yeah. Well, not that like something like the DIY Rainbow you would want to like cash in on or commercialize, but do you think somehow or is there some way that that your activism and stuff can pay the bills? Like how?
I think like for me at the moment, I think it's all about synergies. So I was sort of, it was definitely through DIY Rainbow that I got to become on the board of directors at Mardi Gras. And I've learned so much being there and about how that event runs and how the organization runs.
Yeah.
And a lot of the players in government. And it was through, you know, because of DIY, I don't know if you remember, but Facebook actually flew me over to their HQ last year.
Is that the one in Palo Alto? What's the place called?
Yeah, in Palo Alto, yeah. Just Facebook headquarters, yeah, in Palo Alto.
Well, hang on, stop here for a second. Yeah. Before we get back to that question, I know it was a big question, but tell me quickly about Facebook headquarters.
Oh my God, I don't know. I feel this is what we're talking about for being free and what you can and cannot say. You know what I mean? So, but I really
as in you're not allowed to say too much about what goes on in there, or
No, they're really cool. I didn't think I signed anything. They're cool, but it's like Facebook have this really cool or not so cool unspoken language, and it's a culture that you can pick up on. You can sort of read what they probably would like you to say and what you wouldn't like to say. But I'll give you the goss. It was really Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory meets North Korea. It was like it was phenomenal. It was amazing. But at the same time, there were cameras everywhere, and it was a little bit sort of there was a vibe, right?
Yeah.
Like I remember, luckily I had a really good girlfriend of mine, Izzy.
Yeah.
And she's based in New York in advertising, so she flew over, and I got her in on the tour as well. And I gave a little talk there, just at one of the restaurants. But like even just going to the toilet, Izzy would need to be sort of escorted. But
really?
it wasn't like, you know, I think the Aussie.
Well, just in case you went, oh, I just got to go take a piss, and then you just duck off down the hallway and like, oh, algorithm, bang, bang, bang,
into a server. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I think so. I don't know what it was about. But I think the Aussie way is to sort of go, hey, guys, welcome to our company. Like, oh, I'm really sorry, but, you know, wherever you go, you've got to be escorted. But instead it was sort of like, hey, these are all the restaurants. Everything's free. Do whatever you want. Take whatever you need. Have a great time. And then it was sort of like, oh, I need to go to the loo. And they'll be like, oh, my God, hi, my name's Robin. I need to go to the toilet as well. I'll come with you.
And it was all sort and I'll come with you with my clipboard and dark glasses.
I should write a book about it. It was really funny, but it was really fascinating, you know. It was really, really interesting. And at the same time, I don't know if you remember Instagram's app Bolt.
No.
Bolt came out last year. It's like their competitor to Snapchat.
Okay.
And they were just
It's obviously doing really well since I've never heard
of
it.
Oh, my God. It was doing really well when it launched, too. And all the employees like, oh, my God, I'm going to Bolt you. Like, oh, I'll send you a Bolt, James. Woo. And it was like... It was the Kool-Aid is strong there. The Kool-Aid is strong.
A lot of energy.
But I got to tell you, they've been really supportive. And Facebook Australia, I've sort of become my job with Facebook Australia has sort of become. I'm like the drag queen whisperer. So when drag queens have an issue because of this real name situation that's going on, and someone complains and they get their account revoked, I'm like the liaison officer that sort of deals with. I verify this is a real drag queen, and they need their name back. And I email the head of policy over there, and we sort it all out. So it's pretty cool.
So what's your title then? Because that sounds hilarious, and that's one of the things when I add to /Lee/that
drag queen. I think drag queen whisperer. It's an unpaid position at Facebook Australia, but. I think they're very nice. They've selected me as the point of call to work out, you know, who's a drag queen and who's just not complying with the real name policy.
Would you ever work with them full time? Is something you're not really interested, or it depends?
Yeah, look,
and
that's probably fitting back to your first question about what I should be doing with my life. I think you know, actually, what I have a real passion for is making activism fun, and I think that when I look back on it now, with DIY and even with just Q&A, or if you remember when I was searching for that housemate in Sydney and we did like a live cross with Mel and Koshy and stuff, and even that was really about the rental market in Sydney and how awful it is. I think I could definitely see myself somewhere in that field, maybe with Get Up or whatever you just said.
It's like when you say making activism fun, that it seems like such an obvious positive thing that I guess hasn't been obvious since the birth of activism, because you always think when you hear activist, you think of like some angry do-gooder, or like just like some, it's like a negative thing, because they're obviously fighting for something they're passionate for, but it seems like a negative thing.
It's such an interesting thing, you know, because my expertise now is really marriage equality, because DIY Rainbow, we've got about 60,000 followers on Facebook, and DIY Rainbow cares about all sorts of issues, of gay issues, but really at the moment, same-sex marriage is the big one.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting. I'm probably in the center in terms of what we post on a daily basis about, you know, the issues and the politicians and, and the gifts. But then we've got the Australian Marriage Equality Lobby.
Yeah.
They're really quite conservative. They have an office in Canberra. They're a little bit older. They deal directly with the politicians, and they organise some rallies all around love.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Community Action Against Homophobia, who are actually a front for like the socialist sort of alliance here in Sydney. And they're just like, F you, Tony Abbott. They're their posters, and F Tony and all this sort of stuff. And they have these really... I spoke at one of their rallies, and their rallies, I mean, I'm way more in the middle, but they're fun. Like, everyone's swearing and yelling. It's so not appropriate for children.
Yeah, right.
So not appropriate for
is that one of those ones where it's like, oh, again, I feel your passion, but, like, swearing at these people isn't going to make them want to help
exactly,
you?
Exactly. But also, by the same token, I would also say to AME, loosen up a little bit sometimes as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's about finding a really nice balance. I think a lot of these sort of groups need really good marketing communication officers to come up with good sort of social media strategies to get their sort of cause the traction that it deserves.
Yeah.
So there's definitely that sort of potential for me, I think. But look, I've avoided that for now. Up until like last week, I've been doing a breakfast radio show just from Stonewall for OX Live, Brooklyn Ross's baby.
Yeah.
And I've really enjoyed that, and I love presenting, and I probably prefer to do my fun activism around some sort of a show and thinking about that at the moment. I know that if I did some sort of social media strategy job, that I'd just fall in love with it and I'd end up doing it for 10 years.
Yeah, well,
and I've just got to decide, well, am I ready to hang up the sort of the hosting...
Yeah, like it's like you've. Yet. I always feel like I wish there was multiple of me, because there's lots of things I'd like to do, but only 24 hours. Like, for instance, I live in regional WA, because that's where my radio job is, but that means I sacrifice like everything else, because there's nothing else here.
Yeah, exactly. And look, by the same token, in terms of like commercial radio jobs in the city, they're just far and few between, and you need to generally do that pathway to get there. So I struggle. I find it very easy to get on TV and to do certain things because I'm based in the city.
Yeah.
But then those sort of jobs aren't here for my level of not really being known in the mainstream.
Yeah, although I would argue that despite me having done a couple of years of commercial radio in the sticks, that I would be no closer to a metro radio job than you based on this stuff that you've done.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's... look, I secretly agree. I sort of,
secretly agree out loud on a recorded podcast that people can re-listen to.
I'll tell you what, I'm in the headquarters now, this barbecue store, but a couple of years ago when I first started there, I was just at this store where not many people came in, and it was a sweet, it was like a little black books job, it was so good, I get customers out of there, and I just work on my laptop and tweet.
Yeah.
And I read a lot of Wikipedia about, you know, really successful people, and I really thought about, my problem really was for radio being such a youth-orientated market, in particular. At being 25, 26, I really felt like, ah, oh, damn it, like, it'd be okay if I was 20, but I don't feel that I necessarily have the time, or maybe the, I think I'd go crazy and get old and fat if I went regional for a few years.
Yeah, well, I'd never... 30. When I was 24, I'd never been in a radio studio. So I started when I was 24.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
And I sometimes think, oh... And not that, like, I regret what I did when I was younger, but, like, I was like, geez, I wonder if I started when I was 18, what I'd be doing now. Like,
yeah, exactly, exactly. It's funny. You probably hate it already and moved on to something else.
Yeah. I'd be like, this is shit. I'm going to work in finance. I just would have all been backwards.
Look, I definitely think I don't take anything away from my university days and working in law and stuff, because it gives you a totally different mindset to other people as well. And you'd get that with accounting, like, I don't know what, but something, you must have something out of that, like numbers and stuff.
Yeah, oh, and like, yeah, I wrote a thesis in finance, and about,
yeah.
Which is like, just thinking about that now, like I think about that most days, like just briefly, and go, geez, that was a fucking waste of time.
No, but I think you get more out of it than you realize, particularly discipline and hard work and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I often say, like, just anyone who's finished, and I say this to people when they finish their arts degree and then go, shit, what does it mean? I just spent all this time doing nothing. And I said, but if nothing else, it proves that you can start something and finish it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I even look back at, like, being programming director at the local community station. Like, I was on the board of directors there, and Mardi Gras is, like, a multi-million dollar, you know, it's a totally different kind of a thing, like, you know, 100 times bigger. But you, having that experience, just being on a board, knowing how to read a constitution, you can jump in straight away, and you don't even have to think twice. You know, if I was some sort of Z-list celebrity that didn't really have a legal background, and you're doing these sort of things, like, I'm going to run and have this hilarious media campaign to reverse the parade, and then you actually get on there, and you're like, oh my God, like, I have to actually understand how all this works.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
Very lucky. But yeah, look, man, different paths. I felt then at around... Then when I first started out, like even at 27, after doing a year or two of community radio, I was like, oh, I could go to radio school, and then I could go to like Bega and do that. And then you're like, well, then I might be 33, and
then what?
No one will know me, and I just got to be really lucky that someone likes me, and I've still got my hair, you know? So I thought, I'm just going to do media stunts in the city until someone gives me a job, so...
Yeah, and do you think...
That's what I'm still doing.
I guess from a... But yeah, like I said, I don't, like... I sometimes see fun stuff that you're doing and go, shit, I wish I was just living back in the city and just doing
shit
as well.
Yeah, sure. And I see your radio station website and think, man, that's cool. I'd love to be living my dream every single day. Yeah.
But do you think let's think about from like the radio boss's point of view, like say if they didn't know you, but, like as in personally, but they've seen what you've done, would you, as a radio programmer, hire you just knowing that there's this loose guy that can grab attention from time to time, but I don't know what he's like as an actual radio presenter day in, day out?
Of course not, which is why...
But I don't know, I didn't think I necessarily wouldn't. Like, if you had a good duo and you need a loose cannon third wheel or, you know, it's just like a little add-on, I'd be like, oh, that I'd dig that.
I think I've really demonstrated craziness, but also a concerted... consistency with hard work as well. What you'd have to do, if you go look at the DIY Rainbow page, I'm the only person running that, and I'm competing with lobby groups and bigger organizations that have quite a few people working their social media.
Yeah.
And it's quite a good curated feed, day in, day out for 2 years, building it up. I think when it went viral, it was like 10,000 people, and now it's 60,000 people. I get huge reach, mate. Like, I think last week with Ireland passing marriage equality, our reach for the week was 8 million people.
Far out. So that's unbelievable.
It's phenomenal. Yeah, and then also, I've been so blessed here in Sydney, Brooklyn Ross, who's the gay newsreader for the Carl and Jackie O show, he has a gay...
Or just newsreader.
Newsreader. He's also the gay one.
Yeah, right.
I think they call him the gay newsreader, I don't know. walking in Jeff Field's footsteps.
Yep.
He started OX Live and a news station now, OX Gold, which is basically just two internet streams coming from the Stonewall Hotel. And I've been a presenter on there for a long time and just did, you know, a stint doing breakfast for about a year. So, you know, I think I've got the okay goods to back it up as well. But I totally agree. Like, there's definitely everyone's path has comes with a different set of skills at the end of the day.
It just occurred to me, and like, it's sort of obvious. It's not really a thing now, I don't think, but I reckon when maybe 10 years ago, most brekkie crews had their Ollett's Cross to insert loose unit nickname on the street, and they would always be doing that dumb shit. Dan and Maz, why wouldn't they? Like, all right, Dan and Maz's producers come to you and go, "Oh, look, we're new to the brekkie show in Sydney. We need something different. What could you bring? What could you bring to our show?"
I think so too, but I actually think the way radio is changing as well is that organic relationships may be the way to go as well. Like, if I had more time, like, that's what I should be thinking about and actually calling in on the show to start with and building that relationship up. as well. Yeah. Like, they shouldn't need to think of it. Like, I'm a man of Sydney. Yeah. I should be on the street and just calling in on every radio station until someone likes you. You know what I mean? So...
Well, it happens though. You get these people, like, and I've had it on shows I've done where someone calls in and they don't do it because they want to be a media talent. They're just literally a loose unit. And then it's funny when you're talking about something and you go,
totally.
Actually, let's see what the loose unit thinks about this. Or let's send that guy off there and see what he reckons.
Well, that's it. I think actually a very attractive guy, I forget what his name is, he sort of got his Better Homes and Gardens stint. He started off as... a caller in for American Rosso regularly as a builder, but I forget his name, so that's bad.
The guy with the curly hair?
Tom
Williams.
Yeah.
Really?
I think that's true. I think that's true, yeah.
Is it unprofessional? See, here, I'm sort of new to podcasting. I'm going to look up Wikipedia right now.
Yeah, do it. Look it up. I'm pretty sure Tom Williams used to call in on the American Rosso show, like, years ago.
Yeah.
And that's how he sort of fell into his whole life. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Tom Williams. And of course, Wikipedia would know. Here we go. The turning point in Williams' life occurred in 2000 when he phoned into radio show hosted by comic duo American Rosso. His style interests them, so they gave him a regular segment on the show. This was followed by an offer on the long-running travel show Great Outdoors in mid-2001.
That's it.
He was a caller. Now look at him. I love that guy. I reckon he's great.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. And I think that's the best way how it can happen is just like organic stuff.
You set up your office. You sit down at 6 a.m. Yeah. You listen to all three, Brecky, Nova, Kyle and Jack, Dan and Maz all at the same time. And you just call on every topic for everything.
Yeah, I got a point. I got a point of view. Yeah. I think, you know, I was actually... Did you ever audition for Big Brother? Because that was probably my game plan, to be honest.
And you know what? I
refuse.
The thing with me, like, the thing I like about my job... is actually, like, sitting down and, like, creating the content.
Yeah,
and so for Big Brother, like, A, I would be bored, but B, if they didn't give me anything to do all day, like, I would be boring to watch. Like, you know what I mean? I'd just be sitting there not doing anything.
I think you're looking at it all wrong. I mean, the platform's there. And
that's what I mean. That's not what...
all these people looking. But it,
I know, you know, deep down it could help my career.
You can create the content. You just have to create it with the other housemates that are in the room with you. That's all.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just not
me.
I'd
love it.
Yeah. And I get jealous. It's like, I see Big Brother people get jobs and I get jealous and go, that's crap.
Yeah,
but I'm
sure.
What? Good on them. They had the balls to do it.
You never know the backstory. And I've auditioned for Big Brother like a couple of times, actually.
Yeah.
And so good on them for getting...
When you say, that was my game plan, I thought you meant that you decided against it. But you know,
no,
you
were... That's my game plan to get on.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Because again, that was my feeling was, I've done a bit of radio now. I know how it all sort of rocks and rolls and I just need that chance to get launched on. And so that would have been a lot of fun. But I actually would have really liked to just enjoy to have played the game as well. Like, I can be a bit Machiavellian. I enjoy it.
Yeah, right.
I'd have a fight with someone.
Yeah, I'm
great.
Not. Yeah. See, when I say like making the content, I'm quite happy to write a skit and not voice it and it be on someone else's show. Like, I'd quite happily be a writer for a comedy show. Not that I'm a good comedy writer, but I just, the attention isn't... probably the least favourite thing in my job.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So having said that, are you still going to apply for Big Brother? It's still on, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure it's axed, mate. I don't think it's going to come back this year. I think Sonia's been shoved onto The Voice with Darren, and I think they might be thinking about a celebrity Big Brother.
Okay, because guys, just thinking about it now, it's mid-June, and if usually you see all those photos on social media of the auditions and stuff. So if they haven't started doing that by now...
That's it. It's not going to happen. And look, I don't know if it's the best game plan now anyway, to be honest with you. The format is getting a bit tight in Australia. It would have been good a couple of years ago when it was really hot. Who's the guy over? Is he over in WA broadcasting? The red-haired, frizzy-haired guy? He's huge.
Michael Beveridge?
Yeah.
No, he was in Adelaide and is now in Melbourne doing three different shows. He's very clever on radio.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'd love to do any of those shows.
Would you even know who won last season? Because, I'm out.
No, we interviewed every single evictee on our show. Even having spoken to every single one of them.
That's when you know the seasons are dying.
Well, I spoke to...
Ryan John, the exclusive.
We're on the list. When they get evicted, they do like 20 the next day.
I'm joking.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. I interviewed every single one of them, including the winner. And I honestly could not tell you a single one of them now. And I've had conversations with them all. I couldn't tell you one of them.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? But then you look at Chrissy Swan and how well she's done out of it, you know? And she took those years off to do the hard yakka and do the radio.
Yeah.
Before she sort of got the traction.
But, yeah, well, I think, like, say Fitzy. I reckon Fitzy's hilarious. I'm Fitzy and Whipper. And I argue that maybe it would have been tougher to get started and the journey would have been different, but I still feel like he would have been what he is now anyway.
Oh, absolutely agreed. Absolutely agreed. And that's the only bad thing about doing one of those shows is that industry people always attack you from being one of those people on one of those shows.
Yeah, yeah.
But the public don't care. The public love it.
So, well, you're right, though, it is such an industry thing. The average person doesn't give a shit. But no, I guess the idea of Big Brother is to get yourself known and a platform. I would argue that you potentially already have that.
To an extent in Sydney. I have quite a bit of that. I think at the moment I've heavily invested just because of the nature of, going back to your previous question about how many things I was doing, I was just throwing spaghetti up against the wall all the time, you know, waiting for something to make traction. And I do the most silly things, and some things worked and some things didn't. But when DIY Rainbow hit, not only was it a great hit, but also it was actually quite beautiful and nice. It transcended beyond the rainbow crossing. It was more about gay rights, and that was lovely, and I loved it. And, you know, I was totally for it. And so there was a real challenge for me not to use it in a crappy Z-list celebrity way to sort of get a job. And there was also a real pressure to get more invested with the gay community and really see how far I could take it. And so what's happened over the last couple of years is, I transcend sexualities. I think I'd be a great mainstream presenter, would be the dream, I think, one day.
Yeah.
And so at the moment, I think I've got a following, but I think it's very gay and it's very Sydney. So it's about working out how that's going to work.
I often argue that my radio audience, which is regional Western Australia, is very different to my Twitter audience, which is a whole bunch of gay dudes that want to bang.
Exactly.
One day the audiences will be the same, but that is not present day.
The good thing with me, I think I would pick up a lot more than you. Do you know what I mean? Like, in terms of...
The first reason is because you're actually gay and would actually hook up with them.
Pretty much I'd say how that's they paid me at OX was through blowjobs.
Can I quote that on Twitter when sending a link to this podcast?
Absolutely, mate.
All right.
Worries.
Excellent. All right. Before we finish up, a couple more questions. You said a lot of gay activism, and at the moment the big topic, as it has been for the past few years, I guess, is same-sex marriage. Do you reckon this year's the year, or have you thought that every year for the last 5 years?
No, not really. I don't think it is the year, and a lot of reasons for that, but we'll see what happens. I just think the momentum after Ireland was the last couple of weeks, and now that that's dying down, I really think if it goes to a free vote in August, it'll be a really tight vote.
Yeah.
And as far as I can see, it might even just fall over. So it's really sad because it should just happen ASAP.
Yeah, well, the saddest thing for me is I saw this quote and it said, remember how we used to make those jokes that were Irish jokes, and the joke was that the Irish were really slow and backward? How can we now make... We can't do that now.
The Catholicism is strong, you know? Like, they are a very conservative nation. So it's just... Yeah, it's really funny that we're taking so long to get it done. I think there's a lot of reasons for it in Australia. We're a more chilled out nation generally. And even a lot of... I'll probably get in trouble, but, you know, even a lot of the gay community is sort of like, oh, it's going to happen when it happens. Like, it's going to happen. So... there's a bit of that blowback as well. You've got to force these people to make it happen. It's always going to be constantly on.
Yeah,
but people are really, and you know what our situation here is on a whole range of issues in Australia, everyone's just really apathetic because the governments have been consistently douchey.
You're right though, yeah.
No one has an expectation that things will get done. I mean, you know, even Kevin Rudd eventually became for marriage equality, and Julia was for a conscience vote but voted against it. You got to remember Malcolm Turnbull voted against it too when it went to vote last time.
Yeah, right. I hate the concept of a conscious vote because it just implies that you don't use your conscience on the other times. Like, I know it's just a name for
I hate it that you need a conscience in order to vote. Like, that your conscience would tell you to vote no for marriage equality is also something that I struggle with.
Yeah, that is quite
true. It's ridiculous. And it's like, it's a bit like, it's like, can you imagine if you had that conversation around another civil right, like the right to marry a different race, which the law has to change for, or the right to give Indigenous people the vote or women the vote, that, you know...
And consciously,
would be running around arguing, oh, well, I want a conscience vote on this issue because, you know, my religion says that, you know, men are more important than women. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, far out. I've got two more questions before we finish up. First of all, If you were to chat to 18-year-old Brecco, what would you say to young James?
What would I say?
What would be the main, like, one point that you'd be like, just really keep in mind this, or just this one thing, don't do that?
I think just relax and keep smiling. It's some really good advice that I got early on in my life about keep smiling, and it's so important. I think
especially when a mouth as big as yours.
Yeah, man. Yeah, especially. I just think, you know, I definitely can get anxious, and I definitely can think too much about things. And sometimes when you just chill out and be the happiest you can be, things just tend to work out.
So, yeah, man.
And yeah, I've loved where my life has taken me in many ways. So yeah. It's a hilarious ride.
It is a hilarious ride, and I can't wait for the book. And actually, just on that, it would be a cracking book, because like I said, I don't know how it will pan out for anyone, but I know that even what you've done now, you can look back and go, I've done some stupid things and it was awesome.
Yeah, totally, man, totally. There's now, good stories there.
Last question, and given that my podcast is called From the Internet, because it's people that I've come to know from the internet, what do you think, or how do you think your life would be different without it? Because I guess a lot of these stupid things wouldn't be anything without the internet and the ability to share it without getting approval from...
nearly everything I've done, Channel V flew me to Malaysia to blog once, you know, even, of course, like DIY Rainbow, it wouldn't even be possible without Facebook photo sharing. The internet, it's just a beautiful... I remember at university someone telling me about MySpace and me sort of rolling my eyes, and then I got into it and I was designing my layouts, and man, social media has changed the world.
Yeah, so for you, like before you were just saying, I kind of had the choice, do I go to radio school and move to Bega? And by the way, I guess we both know Bella. Is that why you keep saying Bega as the reference point of going to the country?
I think it's a dig at Brooklyn Roth. I think he went to Bega.
Yeah, so, but you said before, do I do radio school and then move to Bega, or do I stay in the city and just do these online stunts? Does that mean without, I know it's hard to think without the internet now, but does that mean maybe you would have done the Bega thing if not for the internet?
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. I think a lot of people are doing the Carl Sanderlands thing now because, like, he's probably the biggest radio personality on the scene, and that's what he did. But if you go back 5-10 years before him, it was definitely comedians like Wendy Harmer and all that sort of stuff. It was definitely, there was still definite radio school nerds and radio.
Yeah. Oh, I still think, like, for instance, now on the Hit Network, you've got Dan DeBoof. You could argue he's done a lot of stage and stuff. Dave Thornton, comedian. Amos, comedian.
The pendulum swings all the time, all the time. But I think the actual professional radio people on FM, that moment has been really big recently.
Yeah, I don't always like the style. Like, my show, if I had my dream show, would be different to the Kyle and Jackie O show. But I always think back to, you know what? He was this kid, he was in country radio, and he was just like, fuck them all, and he's made it to the top. So without listening to a second, I will always go good on him for that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I think he's great. And what I think was really cool about what he did was what a lot of people weren't doing. So I think he was competing against a lot of comedians and stuff at the time in Metro. So it was cool. And he's not like a stand-up comic or anything. You know, he won't do that. He's just a host.
Yeah, but he is still quite funny.
Oh, he's great. He's great. It's a situational comedy, though. It's really witty. It's quite good. What was the question?
Without the internet, your life would be
good. Oh, yeah, absolutely, mate. And it's so funny how the internet's kept me in the city, you know, whereas I would have had to go probably to the country, which is so weird because it's often the internet is what gets people to stay in their local environments in the country, not having to travel.
And this is the most glorious way to end a podcast. Without the internet, you and I would never have known of you. A lack that existed, and then I wouldn't have tweeted you. We wouldn't have become these weird online friends, and then that wouldn't have resulted in you inviting me to a drag queen contest, which was the last time we hung out in person and got drunk at that whatever place
I was. I know, and it was actually such
I think to myself, is that a good thing?
I was like, you know, we had the big grand finals of that competition on last Thursday night.
Well, I'm sad I wasn't invited.
I should let Ryan know who won, like he'd care or remember anyone's name. But God, that was funny, mate. The drag queens do their stuff in Sydney. So
you're like, welcome to Sydney. Here's what we do.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. No, it's been an amazing ride, mate. An amazing friendship with you, absolutely. So congratulations. I watched you at the same time, sort of like, you know, doing radio, coming back from Thailand. I remember the first time I heard of you, you did an article about your radio days in Thailand, right?
Okay.
Was it Thailand?
Yeah, I worked I started a station in Phuket,
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, who is this crazy nut who left accounting to do that? And then
Well, you...
All good.
Well, yeah, you should have seen the look on my dad's face when I said, I'm giving up my job in this big finance firm to start a radio station in Phuket. That was interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But hey, that's something dumb that you would do as well, I guess.
No worries. All right, mate, just before you wrap it up, hang on a sec. Yeah.
This is the first time in a podcast I've heard where the guest puts the host on hold to take another call. Will I edit this out, or will I leave this in? If you're hearing this, you know the answer.
Sorry, man, that's security. Just asking if I'm ever going to close the store today.
All right, well, maybe I'll let you do that. James, thank you very much for your time. Thanks for being on my podcast.
Ryan, thank you, Ryan. Have a great one, mate. Cheers.